Welcome to the Collector's Show for another week. I'm Harold Nickel here on Web Talk Radio. Coming up in the interview segment of the program, we're going to be meeting a man who's not just an expert, but an actual artist. Joseph Porcelli is a man who is helping to revolutionize and define a very uniquely American art form, and that art form is the Tiffany lamp or Tiffany style lamp, what he hopes someday will be referred to as the Porcelli lamp, and not just a gifted artist, a self-made artist, author, and really an interesting guy. You won't want to miss that in the interview segment of the program coming up after the news. And a word about last week's show. We talked about caning furniture, and the response to that was so overwhelmingly positive. I want to mention that if you weren't able to hear that, you can always go back to the Web Talk Radio website and hear that program and all of the past Collector Show programs for that matter. They never go away. And one of the questions I get more often than not is, well, when is your show on? Well, it's on all the time. It's available to you for download or streaming all day, every day. They are listed on the Web Talk Radio website, and you just click on the Collector's Show, and you'll see all of them with a brief description and a photo of me. And the same is true for iTunes. You can go to iTunes and subscribe to the Collector's Show and have it delivered to your email box each and every week. You can also read more about collectibles and the Collector's Show on our website, which is just like the name of the show, Collector's Show with two S's, collectorsshow.net. And I post things that I think will be of interest to the collectible community there all the time. And we also have a Collector's Show Facebook page, and you can go there and like us, and it allows me to get all kinds of feedback from you, the listeners. And if that weren't enough, you can email me, haroldnickel@gmail.com. Okay, just like always, we're going to talk about news from the world of collecting. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail here, but there is a series of 12 different covers of the Doctor Who series. If you are interested in Doctor Who, and apparently a lot of people are, well, not apparently, a lot of people are, for the 50-year commemoration of Doctor Who, there are 12 separate covers of Doctor Who, and you can get those online. And if you just Google Doctor Who 50 or Doctor Who covers, you'll be taken right to them. I'll post that story on the website. If you've been going to the Collector Show website, you know I've been posting some things about President Kennedy collectibles coming up on the 50-year anniversary of his sad passing. There are lots of auctions, lots of antiques, and lots of things that were perhaps in homes back in the early 60s that are now going up for auction. One of the more common items was the John Fitzgerald Kennedy Memorial Album, which chronicled many of his famous speeches on vinyl. It was a record album. And the record album today sells for $55. Vinyl is experiencing a resurgence. A lot of people might even have a record player to play it on. Objects that relate to the 1960 presidential campaign or personal belongings of the president are among the most highly sought after pieces. The Kennedy campaign posters featuring the slogan "Kennedy for President, Leadership for the 60s" are coveted keepsakes, and they sell for about $325. Of course, campaign buttons with the Kennedy-Johnson ticket sell for around $50. Revell used to have a model of PT-109, which was the PT boat President Kennedy served on in the Pacific during the Second World War. My favorite Kennedy campaign collectible is a cigarette lighter with his photo, President Kennedy and Vice President Johnson. Those lighters were handed out on campaign stops in 1960, and you can get those for between $400 and $600. Now, there are also publications featuring the Kennedys the day the president was shot or the weekend of mourning that followed. Those are pretty easy to come by. They're described in this piece as common, but certain images remain really branded on our memories. I know folks who have some of those old magazines. They're interesting and perhaps important to individuals, but not really considered collectibles. So everywhere you look, if you study news about the collectible trade, you're going to find a lot of material devoted to Kennedy collectibles. If you're lucky enough to go to one of these auctions, I'd like to hear from you. HaroldNichol@gmail.com. I'd like to hear what it was like. Our next news item deals with art thieves, cat burglars. If you're old enough to remember television show and movie To Catch a Thief, that's what I always think about when I think about art thieves. But it's no joking matter, as criminal gangs in the UK have stolen 300 pounds a year worth of art, antiques, and collectibles. And it's second only to the proceeds from drug dealing. 300 pounds is about $450 million or $500 million. Detectives in the UK say that gangs are prepared to use extreme violence to get what they want during these robberies. And a new strategy will be launched by police in the UK to try to take down this kind of crime. For those of you who own works of art, valuable antiques, we've talked on the show before about protecting those. There's no doubt in my mind that this trend will hop the Atlantic and come here. So if it were me and I owned something valuable, and I don't, by the way, I would make arrangements to protect it. Probably a program we should do on insuring collectibles, but you can't replace memories. So hang on to your stuff. Put it in a safe place. Don't leave it to chance. Be smart. All right, coming up in the interview segment, Joseph Porcelli and the trade of glass lamp making. Here on The Collector Show on Web Talk Radio, I'm Harold Nichol. It's the interview segment of The Collector Show, and this week we're going to be talking about a collection and a type of art that is uniquely American. Baseball is uniquely American, as is jazz, and so is the so-called Tiffany lamp, but we're going to learn that there's a lot more to this style of art and this kind of collecting than we ever knew, because we have the opportunity to chat with a man who is not just an expert in the field, but also an artist and somebody who is helping to keep the field of lamps and Tiffany style lamps going. Joseph Porcelli is an author, artist, and expert on what we hope someday will be called the Porcelli lamp. And Joseph, welcome to the Collector's Show.
Well, thank you, Harold, and it's my pleasure to be here, and I'm flattered that you asked me to participate in the show.
And just so people listening will know, this is actually the third time we've had to do this interview because of technical problems on my side, and Joe is nice enough and patient enough to be available. So I wanted the audience to know, Joe, that you're not only an expert, but you're an awfully nice guy on top of all that.
Well, thank you again, Harold. My pleasure.
So we're going to talk about this style of lamp, but before we get too deeply into that, I want to ask you about how you first got interested in glass, and specifically lamps like these.
Well, it wasn't actually interest in glass. When I was younger, I was a musician, and I desperately needed a job. And I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and in the early 70s, there was a small shop that made decorative lamps that kind of Coca-Cola lamps and lamps with some fruit and flowers in it. And they had a very limited production, but they found that every lamp they made, they were able to sell. And this is long before lamps became as popular as they are now, and before the imports kind of dominated the market. So So he had a fledgling little business that he saw he could expand if he could find more people to cut and build his lamps. And there I was looking for a job, and then they were looking for people to train. And voila, I was into glass. But I had no interest in glass whatsoever. I was more interested in making some money and making a living than anything else. And I, in fact, was very bad at it when I first started. I didn't like cutting. I didn't like any of the techniques that had to do with making lamps. They were just something I wasn't familiar with, and I just didn't have any fun with it. But the more I got into it, the better I became at it, and the more I came to appreciate what I was learning.
It sounds like something that you really had to spend a lot of time on to get the hang of it. We hear so oftentimes that people were just naturally attracted to whatever their field of art or collecting was, but that wasn't the case for you.
No, not at all. Like I said, I had no interest in glass whatsoever. I didn't know too much about it, just needed a job. But the field of glass is very, very exciting, very, very deep. And the more I researched it, the more I found things that I liked about it. The fact that you could go beyond simple techniques and do something really beautiful like a Tiffany-style lamp. And at the time, it was the early 70s. It was what we call now the craft revolution, the craft renaissance. So a lot of American crafts were being rediscovered, glass and jewelry and leather and woodworking and pottery. They were all kind of wrapped up and swept up in this new renaissance of things being handmade, and stained glass and Tiffany lamps, and just got swept up with that. So I was kind of lucky to be involved in that, because it was really what I consider cowboy country, because we were just rediscovering this technique and also rediscovering the market for it. So there I was, kind of at in the early stages of what was becoming the craft revolution of the 70s. So it was like a perfect storm of opportunity.
You were in the right place at the right time.
One of the few times.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that the techniques involved in building these kinds of glass lamps were complicated, and that they didn't come naturally. Walk us through what that first few days on the job were like. What did you have to learn?
Well, I had to learn how to cut glass, which is something that's very foreign to you if you've never done it before. Cutting glass is a craft like anything else. They can explain it to you in 20 minutes, but learning how to do it properly takes just practice doing it every day. And in traditional stained glass, you have, of course, glass cutting, glass forming, and glass joining, whether you're joining the glass with lead, like in a traditional stained glass window, or using the copper foil method, so to speak, to build a lamp. So it was a whole new world. I remember I was a musician, so it was the handcrafts were totally foreign to me. So I was really in it was a baptism by fire, so to speak, because I was in enemy territory when it came to learning how to use my hands to build these lamps. But like I said, it was a job, so I did it every day, and every day you got a little better at it. And my boss was very patient in waiting for me to get to the point where the work that I did really paid off for him. But
well, he obviously saw something, though, in you that signaled that his patience was going to be worthwhile. And, so don't sell yourself short. And I'm looking at a photo, and we'll post this on the Collector Show website, of one of your lamps. And it looks to me like you have to, because you were describing the cutting, but it looks like you almost start with big, giant pieces of glass, and you have to cut the pieces of what looks like a puzzle, and then you have to reform them? Is that kind of the way it works?
Yeah, well, if you look at a leaded glass lamp, every shape on the lamp has a corresponding template that's made out of some kind of material that can be used over and over, or can be used to cut around the template to form the piece of glass. So what you do is these templates are used to cut the individual pieces of glass on the lamp, and then the entire thing, once everything is cut, gets assembled over a form or a mold that's the same shape as the lamp.
Yeah.
So it does go together like a big puzzle. It's very, very what I call a processional craft. In other words, it's a series of processes that start with choosing your glass, cutting your glass, and preparing it to be assembled over the mold, and then it gets into finishing techniques and patina. So it really is an involved craft. It's by no means something that was just thrown together or a by-the-way craft. It was very well thought out and very well engineered.
It looks like it, and like so much great art, it's beautiful, but you'd never really realize what was behind it. How many hours, Joe, do you think it took you to do your very first lamp?
Well, my very first lamp took a long time because, in your early days, you're learning your skills. Now, I've been doing this for 30 years, so I'm pretty good at pretty efficient at cutting glass and building these things because I've been building them so long. So a typical lamp for me back then would take a while. It would take, could take a couple of months. But now they take me a little less time. They're still very time, they're very labor intense. I mean, a lamp can take 8 to 12 weeks to finish. That's from beginning to end.
Wow.
So it's not something that you can knock out overnight.
Yeah, and that's something I think that's important for folks who are listening to recognize, that this isn't stamped out by a machine. This is all very painstaking, detail-oriented work, so it's not something you can just wake up one day and say, I know, lamps, and go out in the garage and build them.
No, especially the way I do it, because it's not only the building of the lamp that's time-intensive, but it's the selecting of glass, which is where the real artistry lies, and selecting the proper pieces of glass to build and model your images from. So it's a lot of decision making on the parts of what kind of glass you're going to use and what sections of the types of glass you choose you can actually employ in the lamp. So it's quite a combination of art and craft, so to speak.
It's probably also worth mentioning that the bases of these lamps are made of bronze. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
And you make those?
Every bit is. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
No, I was just going to ask if you also made these bronze bases.
I don't. I design them. I work with an excellent machinist and metal worker who builds them for me. And what most people don't realize when you look at a lamp is that some of those bases are as intricate and as labor intensive as the shades are. And that was true with Tiffany lamps as well.
And they are really stunning. I'm sure that, and I'm looking at photographs of them, but I bet in person they're really something.
So they have to complement the shade.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Well, that's interesting. Complement them in terms of size, shape, color.
Detail, shape, proportion, height. Of course, materials. You want something. It's like putting a good frame on a quality piece of artwork. You just don't want to bang some balsa wood around it. You want something that's going to enhance it. So the choice of base is very, very important if you want the whole unit to be presentable and not look like it's mismatched or awkward.
That's the frame around a good piece of art. That's a good analogy. I don't think I'd put a plywood frame around an expensive piece of art. So it has to have the proper setting, I guess, is what the base provides.
Exactly.
I want to back up to the 70s, and you had said it was a renaissance of crafts. What do you think inspired that?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, you can read all kinds of theories about what was going on in society to spur this, but the 60s and 70s were really a rediscovery, a period of rediscovery for a whole generation. You call them baby boomers, you can call them whatever you want, but when I was one of them, we were just looking for things to get excited about and to get involved in, and handcraft took a portion of that audience and just mesmerized, just captured it. It was almost like something fell from the sky and hit some of us and not others, and we were inspired to get into things that we could make with our hands. But beyond that, it was an audience that was growing that was coming to appreciate that. And like I said, what got swept up is a new appreciation in turn-of-the-century art and craft works, which the turn of the century was another period where the arts and crafts flourished. So it was a rediscovery of existing decorative and fine art that had this element of craft involved, and a rediscovery of the techniques that made those possible, which this new audience started to employ in terms of ceramics and glass. And glass is such a diverse field. I mean, if you think about what you can make in glass. You can make everything from a tiny earring to a stunning stained glass window or ceiling that is hundreds and hundreds of square feet of glass. Its applications are absolutely limitless. And when you start getting into that, I mean, just one discovery leads to another. For me, it was the leaded glass lamp. I kind of had a little tunnel vision as far as what I was interested in. But the field itself was so vast. And given the right, given the right environment, it's easy to get caught up in it.
Yeah, that is that's interesting because you and I are probably about the same age. I'm a baby boomer as well. And I know that folks our age are interested in rediscovering the things that we liked so much when we were growing up back in the 60s and the 70s. Do you find that now people who buy your lamps, are they looking to capture a piece of their, I don't want to say childhood, but are they looking to recapture something from earlier in life, do you think?
Well, I don't know for sure, but what I do think is that my lamps represent an alternative to, I believe that they represent an alternative to Tiffany and Tiffany's contemporaries in terms of value and also in terms of artistry, because I try to add to that language, that dialogue between artist and glass that Tiffany and his contemporaries started. So I try to add my own kind of twist to it by taking what they did and building on to it.
That's such a good segue for us because I wanted to ask you about Tiffany lamps and how your lamps, the Porcelli lamp, how does it differ from Tiffany?
Well, a Tiffany lamp is... Don't forget, Tiffany lamps were made as part of a production process. In other words, it was almost like an industrial lodge. You had a number of people responsible for the lamp. Mine is an individual expression of my experience with glass. Tiffany's designers had to be concerned with... the Tiffany designers had to be concerned with who would ultimately build the lamp, so they didn't know what their limitations were. With me, I know my skill level, so I can design anything that I know that I can make in glass. And Tiffany lamps were made to be production items. The designs repeat a number of times around the shade. In terms of like a dragonfly lamp, the design can repeat up to 9 times. My lamps are done in what I could call a bouquet style, where the design does not repeat. It's one continuing design all the way around the shade, and I like to joke about it, saying that my collectors get tired of looking at one side. They can always spin the lamp around to look at another side, which is entirely different.
And they can tell their friends, I've got a new lamp. I've got a new Porcelli.
There you go.
Look how different it is from the other one. But that's
there you go. But it's a more naturalistic expression of what a bouquet of flowers would actually look like.
And Tiffany seems to have kind of taken on the recognition or the branding like we associate with other products. Nobody says tissue. They talk about a Kleenex or they talk
exactly.
about...
Exactly, yeah.
So it's become...
It's a generic term that represents almost anything that's made out of glass that stands on a base.
So from that point of view and from a recognition point of view and from a marketing point of view, frankly, you have the opportunity to outmaneuver Tiffany by positioning yours as Porcelli Originals, and you can further distinguish them with this non-repeating pattern, non-repeating pattern that you have in your work.
Yeah, and they're also contemporary, so you're seeing something new, not something antique. And the leaded glass lamps are like other portions of the craft and glass industry. Leaded glass lamps were dominated by the antique, by what's antique or what's considered antique, and that's totally opposite to what I do. I represent the contemporary expression of this American art form.
And as we said earlier, it is very much an American original. Now, I want to ask you about someone from whom you got a great deal of inspiration, an individual who worked in paperweights. And if you weren't around in the days prior to air conditioning, we used paperweights to literally hold papers down on our desk because the windows were open.
Uh-huh.
And for those of us who live in, we live in the Houston area, everybody has air conditioning now. There's really no need for a functional paperweight, but you got some inspiration, and tell us about that.
Yeah, well, when I was younger, one of the first successful artists I ever met was a gentleman named Paul Stankard. Now, if you're familiar with contemporary paperweights or paperweights in general, Paul Stankard is the gold standard of paperweight artists. His work today, I mean, if you were a paperweight artist and you were getting into that medium, everything you do is going to be compared to Paul Stankard, whether you like it or not. And he represented a breakthrough similar to what my work is trying to do, because he came from the paperweight market, and that too was dominated by the antique and what was considered antique or classical paperweights. And he was, like I am, a contemporary artist who chose this medium or this form for his particular type of artistic expression. And I don't have any mentors in glass, but Paul has always been a model for me, because he would always stress excellent craftsmanship and skill, and he also stressed being an ambassador for your work. And I always kept that in mind in terms of my own work. And Paul was really an inspiration. He continues to be. Paul's a good friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. But he and I had that in common. I don't think I've ever mentioned it to him, but we did have that in common, that we were both battling with breaking through what's considered an antique or a dead or a dormant art form and breathing new life into it.
And that's a tall order for anybody, regardless of the field, but I would think particularly in an art form. Now, I want to also ask you about where we can actually go and see your work, and where and when it'll be auctioned.
Well, the best place to see my work is on my website, which is www.josephpocellistudio.com. But I do have a piece coming up at the James D. Julia auction in Fairfield, Maine. In fact, on the 21st of November. That's this Thursday, I believe, the 21st
right.
of November. Yeah, I have a beautiful piece coming up for auction. And I've been really successful with lamps at auction. They seem to be in the right environment, surrounded by Tiffany and his contemporaries. And that seems to be where my market is evolving. But the best place to see my work is, of course, on my website. And then, of course, if anyone is interested in my work, the best thing to do is to contact me, because I am a commissionable artist. I do a lot of work with people who either want a particular type of lamp or a particular type of flower or some kind of expression in glass that they think I can produce for them.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because commission lamps by an artist like yourself, that would be something pretty cool to own, I would think.
Oh yeah.
If the collector show does well, maybe someday I'll be able to afford one. That would be cool.
That would be great. It'd be my pleasure to build one for you.
Now, I know that in the past you've written a great deal about the field, and you've taught. Are you still doing that?
Oh yeah, yeah. I got involved in publishing in the 80s. When I first started out, I wanted to be the next Tiffany. It didn't really work out for me. The market wasn't there. So I got involved in whatever I could do to expand my experience with glass and my skill level with glass, and I got into publishing, and I worked for a magazine that specialized in glass information. And in 1993, I was able to purchase that magazine, and we published it for 19 years. It was a magazine called Glass Craftsman Magazine. And through that, we published books, and we also produced a line of instructional videos. And my lamp making actually took a back seat to that for a long time, because I believed that the market just wasn't there for my original work, until just a number of years ago, a dealer friend of mine called and said that he saw a lamp at auction that he was thinking of buying, and he just wanted me to take a look at it and give my opinion. And when I did take a look at it, lo and behold, it was a lamp that I had made in the early 90s. And it went for what I thought was a tremendous amount of money, and I thought, well, maybe the market is ready now for original work in leaded glass lamps, and it kind of re-inspired me, or kind of gave me enough to reinitiate my dialogue with the leaded glass lamp.
And it's a huge clue, I think, when somebody wants to buy a piece and it turns out it's yours.
Yeah,
that's got to be pretty gratifying.
That was a real eye-opener.
And you're also writing a series of articles. Tell us how we can see those.
Oh, yeah, I'm writing a series of articles for the Antique Trader Weekly, or Antique Trader Magazine, on lamps and information about lamps. I've already done one on recognizing quality in lamps. I'm doing one that basically called The Anatomy of a Lamp, where different aspects of the lamp are described so that collectors have a better whole grasp on the language of lamp making. And, they want me to continue with that series. Because I don't think they had anybody who was writing about lamps, and lamps seem to be a very interesting sector of the collector community.
Right, and as a not just as a collectible, but as an American original, they're ever so much more important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, listen, Joseph Portelli, I want to thank you for sharing your knowledge, expertise about lamps and leaded glass with us on the Collector Show.
My pleasure.
And I also want to thank you for being so patient and generous with your time.
Again, my pleasure, Harold.
And again, if you want to go and learn more and see more, Joseph's website is just like his name. It's josephporcellistudio.com. And we'll have that link along with a photo of him and a couple of his lamps on the Collector Show website. If you stay tuned, I'll tell you what's going to be on next week on the Collector Show here on Web Talk Radio. I'm Harold Nickel. Next week on the Collector Show, we'll be meeting a gentleman named Dave Maloney. Dave is a very accomplished appraiser, author, and expert on appraising different types of tangible property, not the least of which is antiques, but we're going to be taking his expertise and talking about making arrangements for your belongings, and more importantly, if you're an heir to someone who is a collector, how to get your parents to make arrangements for their collections, collectibles, and valuables in advance, and how to prevent any kind of heartache associated with conflict between family members over property. And Dave is really an interesting guy. You're going to love hearing what he has to say. In the meantime, thanks for listening to The Collector's Show. Thanks to my friend Brad Saul, who's a source of inspiration and encouragement at Web Talk Radio. Come back next week for The Collector's Show. I'm Harold Nickel.